She the wife, mother, child?
Wife. Wife. My wife. What has happened to me? To her?
Tanner was struggling to come to terms with what his memory was telling him. A great sucking sound, and the eye of God opened, and the wind and blood, so much blood, before being laid to rest amongst the angels. Tanner's query was ignored as the man made a note in the book.
Wife, of course. How could I have missed the wife?
He paused to look at his companions before speaking again.
You've been through a terrific strain, Dr. Tanner. To be frank, I'm amazed you survived.
Survived what? What has happened to me?
A blonde woman with an eager smile appeared.
Something wonderful. You're the first.
It does not feel all that wonderful, my dear. It feels most horrible. Like I've been dead, resurrected.
That's to be expected. My name is Herman Wells. I'll be serving as your physician and your sounding board until you're fully acclimated to our program here.
Suddenly, Tanner sat bolt upright in the hospital bed, nearly cracking his head on a slight overhang of electric lights mounted above the headboard.
Where is my wife? My children?
Later. For now, we are only concerned with you and your well-being.
Hang my well-being, man! I need to see my wife and little Rachel and Jolyon.
In his haste to get out of the bed, Tanner hadn't commented on the bank of high-tech medical equipment blinking to his left, or on the style of clothing Wells and the two other attendants in the room were wearing. An IV drip in one of his lean arms tore free in a spray of blood and solution as he made his way out of the hospital bed. The nurse lunged to grab the leaking IV.
Dr. Tanner, please!
Are they all right?
Tanner's bright blue eyes darted to and fro, examining his surroundings for the first time. The walls of the room were a neutral, soothing mint green color that matched his hospital gown and the linens on the bed. He turned to the man who seemed to act as the leader of the small knot of people surrounding him.
I must be in some form of medical facility, though I admit the design is unfamiliar to me and quite strange. Was there an accident? Tell me, are my wife and children all right?
That depends on the definition. I could say yes and be telling the truth, depending on how closely you want to analyze my meaning.
Tanner grabbed Wells by the lapels of his lab coat.
Double talk! Babble! I have heard your kind before, sir, and I know enough not to waste my time on your attempts to stonewall. Enough of your mendacity!
Jeez, he sure talks funny, doesn't he?
Shut up, you ignoramus!
The automatic door to the room slid open as Tanner approached it, causing him to shrink back in surprise. In 1896, doors weren't known for opening by themselves. The shock of seeing the doors, combined with the presence of two large men standing in the hallway outside the door, was enough to keep him rooted in place.
I feel positively lightheaded.
Tanner reached out to hold onto the frame of the open door for support. Behind him, he smelled the breath of the man who had identified himself as Wells. As he turned to tell the overweight doctor to back off, Tanner felt a stinging sensation in his left buttock. Tanner spun clumsily to face the man, who was holding a syringe.
You're much too active for a dead man, Dr. Tanner. I think you need some more bed rest.
You bastard!
And he fell backwards into the arms of the waiting security team. Wells and the nurse watched the security men gently place Tanner back in the hospital bed, only this time strapping him down with an assortment of nylon belts.
What do you think, nurse?
I don't know, doctor. He seems awfully stubborn.
He'd have to be, to survive the trawling process. Still, I wonder if we have indeed obtained our puppet, and if so, how many strings must be attached before he allows us control.
In the ebony night of the stairwell, Ryan and the others knew they were going to be forced to fight on instinct alone. In the wink of an eye, Ryan had coaxed his mind to visualize his companions' positions. Unlike JB, his memory wasn't as crisp as a photograph, but Ryan's powers of short-term observation were still formidable. This was going to be dirty and intense. They were too close to one another to risk the use of blasters. One ricochet could injure the wrong party. One stray bullet could mean the unintentional chilling of a friend. The only advantage they had was obvious. Their foes were at the same disadvantage in the raven blackness, for even the eerie cat-like eyes of Jack Lauren needed some kind of ambient light to function in the dark. The trusty Panga leapt silently into Ryan's right hand, a quick movement of practiced skill. Unseen by Ryan, JB pulled his own blade from its sheath, while Doc armed himself with the exposed steel of his lethal sword stick. Two of Jack's customized leaf-bladed throwing knives were in his pale hands, one implement in the left and the other deadly cutter in the right, both now invisible in the darkness. When it came to combat in tight quarters, the albino was equally at home using his left or his right hand.
Come, hurt, hurt, come.
Then, all was still. Until a series of shots rang out, a burst of leaded death. Knowing none of his people would have made such a stupid and costly mistake, Ryan lunged toward the white flash he'd spied from the barrel of the weapon, grateful the fool behind the long blaster hadn't thought of fitting the weapon with a flash hider for night firing. Raising his own blaster from his side, Ryan followed through. Ryan stood, holding his breath, waiting and listening. After 60 seconds had passed, Christy spoke.
I think we're alone, lover.
Taking out his lighter, JB thumbed the sparking wheel and held the flame high, looking around at the carnage. Ryan stood from his crouched position and warily walked up to the fallen bodies. The first corpse he spotted was tangled in the stairwell's guardrail, a mess of limp arms and legs, along with a steady dripping of crimson. JB looked up impassively from the slain figure.
Mutie.
Using the light provided by the lighter, Jack had crossed and found the second one he'd taken out, blindly with his throwing knife.
Mine too. Sticky.
No surprise there. Rarely see Norms running with muties, old Lester being the exception.
JB was referring to the scarred human leader who'd taken up with a local band of Stickies and led them in a fatal assault against the Norms of Freedom Mall. Christy picked up the fallen, extinguished torch and held out the tip end to be relit by JB's lighter.
And you, Ryan?
Ryan glanced over at her in the faint light, given off by the tiny flame, knowing she was referring to herself, to her own mutant traits, and he gave her a half-smile in return.
Yeah, and me.
Then he calmly observed the results of his shots in the flickering light. The first one had wormed into the front of the Sticky's right shoulder and out the back in a spray of gruesome red. One of the creature's wide, unblinking eyes was missing where the second one had struck home, boring its way through to the back of the head. The Sticky's hands, typical of the breed, were open in death and ghastly, with long fingers ending in amazingly strong suckers. JB could attest to the power of the mutie's fingertips. He still had scabs on his face where he'd been attacked days earlier. The coin-sized facial wounds were nearly healed now, but for days after the injury, the armorer had been forced to keep bandages on his face. Choosing not to wear a shirt, the dead mutie was bare-chested with the usual Sticky trait of no apparent body hair. He wore a pair of tattered dress slacks that had already turned dark with blood from his wounds. Jack's kill was in similar shape, except the knife had caught the mutie in the throat, puncturing the carotid artery and causing a fountain of the pinkish sticky blood to spray. Some of the blood had peppered Doc, but the man hadn't bothered to make mention of the unwanted shower, since Jack's actions may have saved his life. The albino retrieved his thrown weapon and wiped the blade clean on the sticky's clothing, before returning the knife to an inner hiding place inside his camo jacket.
Wonder what brought them down here, Dad? I thought all the Stickies in this part of Carolina were out smashing through stuff at the mall.
Could be they've started exploring now that they've burned down part of Freedom. Guess we'll never know for sure.
Cowardly bastards. They've probably been hiding in the dark, waiting for a chance to jump someone.
Alas, I fear you are correct regarding our attackers, young Dean. Makes one wary, and sends one sliding backward into childhood, alone in bed, and frightened of the hidden terrors of the night.
Were you scared of the dark when you were a kid, Doc?
Of course not.
Doc then laid a finger alongside his nose and winked.
But my mother was an understanding parent, and allowed me to keep a candle burning in the window all through my slumber. Both for illumination for weary travelers, and for my own youthful peace of mind.
These muties look like rogues, not part of Lester's band. Not smart or organized enough.
JB was busily emptying the dropped Uzi of the clip of 9mm bullets. The fighting in Freedom, combined with other gun battles, had eaten into their supply of badly needed ammunition.
Triple strange to see a Sticky carrying a blaster, though. Usually they prefer to stick to using their hands.
Was that a pun, JB?
The armorer looked back at her blankly.
Huh?
Stick to using their hands. Get it? Stick to. Hands. Stickies!
JB stared at the black woman. She finally gave up on him getting the joke.
Damn, John. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. We have got to work on your sense of humor.
I don't have one.
That's what I mean.
Guess here in Carolina, the local sticky population decided to change their habits, Lester or no Lester. Running into these two answered any doubts I might have.